without further ado, I'd like,
ready?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, my name's Erica. I'm an alcoholic. I don't have anything to say because Janet just said it all. I mean, that's pretty much the sum total. You know, thank you for having me and thank you for waiting for me. Thank you, Janet, for your little talk there to give me a minute to... I parked down the street because I was sure there would be no parking in the parking lot. And of course there was, so I was, you know, I'm trying to hurry to get here and then I parked as far away as possible. Anyway, I am really happy to be here. Who here's working on their first year of recovery? Anybody? Few people? Okay, cool. So here's what I want you to know. When I first came to AA, the first time I really, well, okay, let me back up. The first time the judge sent me to AA was back in the 80s, and I walked up to the door. I think this club was on Cook Street at the time, some of those old timers. That was the Alano Club on Cook Street. Okay, whatever it was, I walked up to the door with my little court card. I looked inside and there was all these old people in there smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee. And I was like, oh no, this is probably not the place for me. So I went across the street to where I worked as a bartender and I sat at the bar and I just handed my court card down the bar and had all my friends sign it because I figured, you know, that would get me off the hook. And really, I didn't have a drinking problem. It's just that I had bad luck. I had had, I think, my second DUI at that point, which I used to joke because back in the olden days, for you youngins, we used to call, it was called a 502. That was the police code for a DUI. And I always joke that, well, now I had a 1004. So, because... But I didn't have a drinking problem. I just had bad luck. I had been partying all night at Alexander's Harvest. I took a Quaalude. Then someone asked for a ride home. I'm like, sure, I'm fine. I'm in my dad's El Camino. And I drive the person to Los Alamos. And on the way back, coming down Miller Street, right before Cook Street, when you get to the mall, I fell asleep. And at that time, there was trees in the center divider, and I took out the first tree, came to stop, and of course, the police station was only half a block away. But I, when I came to, tried to back the car out, and that didn't work. So then I tried to get out, but by the time that second attempt to flee failed, the cops were there, and it was not because of the drugs and alcohol. It was simply because if I had been in my own Volkswagen van, I would have been sitting upright, it would have been cold, but by dad's El Camino, I was kicked back and had the heater on, and I was, you know, it was a long night, and so I just fell asleep. So obviously, not a drinking problem, and I solved it by having my court card signed. About 33 years ago, I quit doing drugs. I knew I had a problem. Now I had a small child and I decided I needed to stop doing that. But I didn't stop drinking because that was socially acceptable. I grew up, you know, my family was Swiss Italian. We had, you know, cocktails at dinner, cocktail parties and wine with meals. And so I didn't quit drinking. And I had everything that Janet described. I had the house and the husband and the kids and the job and the cars and the boats and all that stuff. So I didn't have a problem. It's just the way I like to party. And it got worse, obviously, progressively worse and worse. And then my family was starting to give me grief about my drinking. So I decided, well, I'll just show them. I'll just quit drinking. And so I pretended that I quit drinking, right? I think I actually maybe quit for like 17 days with one little slip in between. But so I would just put the vodka in my water bottle. Now I thought I was genius for thinking of that, and then I come to AA and find out that this guy up on the mesa said no, he filled his windshield washer tank with vodka and then ran a hose through the firewall. Now that was a genius. What we will do for our booze. So one afternoon after work, because I would pick up a, I would pick up like a half pint or something on the way home from work, fill my water bottle, so just so I could be okay when I got home, and then the family would, you know, I wouldn't be a problem. Well, I did the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing when my daughter came in the door and said something to me, and it just set me off. So I go into my, oh, poor me, I'm just going to kill myself, and I run up the stairs to get the gun, which I knew there was a gun, but I had no idea where there was bullets. But I was, you know, being very dramatic. And my daughter called 911. So they carted me off to the psych ward or the whatever it is in San Luis Obispo. And my husband at the time called the next day. That's a horrible experience, by the way. All I really remember about it was green walls and this very large nurse named Sue. But he called the next day and said that he would come pick me up if I promised to go to an AA meeting that night and get a sponsor that day. And of course, I'm like, sure, I'll do anything to get out of here. So I called this, he had a number of a woman. I called her, I asked her to be my sponsor. She's like, sure. And she met me at a meeting that night. And for the first time in my life, I mean, I have no idea what anyone said, but I realized that there was hope, that maybe I could get sober. Because up until that point, I was at the place where I knew I needed to stop, but I would stand in my walk-in closet with my hidden bottles of vodka and think to myself, you know what, all I have to do is get my kids to the age of 18, and then I can just die. You know, I can just drink myself to death. And that's where I was. But in this meeting, I thought, well, maybe there is a way. So I read the big book, and I got a sponsor, and I worked those steps, only one through three, but I worked those steps, and I could talk the talk, boy. I could talk AA, and I would go to meetings, and I would call and lie to my sponsor about what I was doing, and I stayed sober about 5 months. My ex used to tell me that if I got sober, everything would be better. Well, I got sober for a minute and everything wasn't better. And so he had agreed not to drink in the house. He was only going to drink out in the shop just to support me. Well, I don't know about you, but I could smell alcohol for a mile away. And when he would sneak into the office and pour himself a drink, I knew that there was booze in there. So one day I go in there and no one's home, and I find the bottle and I take pull off the bottle, and I went, wow, this AA works, because that's all I need. I am good with this one, you know, shot of vodka. And I go on my merry way for about a week, and I think, you know what, AA is cool. I now know how to drink responsibly. And it was on a Wednesday, and the following Wednesday, I went in that office and I took two shots. And I'm like, magic. It's just like magic. I love AA. And of course, you probably can guess what happened by the following Wednesday. I was drinking just like I had before. And for that first year and a half, I came in and out of AA. I had a drawer full of 30 and 60 day chips. But for some reason, I kept coming back. And finally, after a failed attempt at an outpatient program, for some reason I just decided to pick up a bottle of vodka, and I proceeded to have a 4-day blackout. And at the end of that, I decided I had enough AA in me that I figured out, you know what, I am out of, you know what, where it says in chapter 3, we tried everything, You know, we tried every form of experimentation and, you know, self-deception to prove we could drink like an alcoholic. I realized then that I had tried every form, every experiment. I had tried everything I could figure out to do to stay sober, and nothing was working. So I just gave up. I said, all right, I will do what you people tell me to do. And that was when I started to feel different. That's when I finally decided to do it your way and not my way. And I can tell you, so if you're new and you're struggling, then just all I can say is just keep coming back. Because eventually, and hopefully, luckily for me, I got here before I died, you know? And I've been here long enough now that I know for a fact, because I've been in enough meetings, that the big book is right. There's three options for us. We either get sober, we end up in jails or mental hospitals, or we die. That's it. For an alcoholic, those are the three things we have to look forward to. For me, since I decided to listen to you guys and work those steps, all 12 of them in order, and then repeat them as needed, my life has gotten better. It really has. It hasn't been easy at times, but I have always been able to count on Alcoholics Anonymous to hold my hand, to pick me up, to, you know, to really, that's why we say we're not all sick on the same day, because, you know, when I'm in the trenches, maybe you're the hand that reaches down and pulls me out, and vice versa. When you're down there, I'm gonna reach up down and pick you up. And it's made a difference. So just, I gotta talk for another 30 minutes? Okay. So, well, I just want to tell you how normal alcohol was for me. When I was 4 years old, my brother and sister are 11 and 12 years older than me, and my grandma was from Switzerland, and she would make this little concoction in the morning when she was helping get my brother and sister ready for school, and then she was going to babysit me. And it was like coffee and milk and a frothed egg and cinnamon and nutmeg on top, and on really cold mornings, she'd put a little shot of whiskey in there, because that's just, you know, what you did. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. I mean, even as a small child, I remember having it and thinking, this is wonderful, and it works so well to warm me up. And when my dad would take me clamming at Pismo when I was 8 or 9 years old, it would be early in the morning, low tide, he'd put me on the shore with a pitchfork so that he could go out on a sandbar and get two limits. And when we were done, we'd go back to the truck and unload the stuff, and or load up, and he'd give me a shot of, well, he called it sand dune cutty sark, but I came to learn that that's just scotch, right? But we were out at in the sand dunes, so. And there was nothing, you know, I didn't think anything was weird about that, because it worked. It got me warm. And then when I was 12 and was at a party with my parents, all the kids went up on the roof and made a suicide punch out of all the leftover booze. And that was the first time I really got drunk. And I remember driving home with my parents, my mom, I'm throwing up out the window, my mom saying, oh, I wonder what she ate that made her so sick. My sweet mom. And my dad grumbling, it's not what she ate, it's what she drank. And they got me in bed, and the next morning was Easter Sunday, and I'll never forget them opening the door and looking in on me. They didn't make me get up and go to church. They looked at me, and I saw that look of disappointment on their face. And I thought, well, the next time I do this, I'm gonna have to make sure they don't find out. And that's how I know now that I'm a real alcoholic, because that was my thought process at 12 years old. I knew I was gonna drink again. And to be honest, I never drank socially. I have never had a glass of wine in my entire life. My whole reason for ever drinking anything was to get as drunk as possible. And as it turned out, it worked out great, because it made me popular with the other kids. I could drink more than most everybody else, so I was always the designated drunk driver. I mean, I majored in parking lot in high school and managed to still get grades. I mean, we alcoholics are usually pretty high functioning for a long time. I don't know, it says in the big book, if you, to the employers, you know, you probably have a really bright, brilliant, productive person on your hands if you'll just give them a chance and the tools to get sober instead of firing them. And I really believe that's true. I believe that most of us have gifts and potential and brains and things that we can use if we could just stay sober long enough to do it and we don't sabotage ourselves all along the way. So I don't want to bore you with all the details of my, I mean, I have quite an extensive drunkalog. If you think about it, 35 years of drugs and alcohol. I mean, I've driven getaway cars. I'm serious. And I've done some pretty, pretty crazy stuff. But the good news is that today, you wouldn't know it to look at me. So this program does work. Recently in March, I was let go from a job that I'd had for 22 and a half years. They eliminated my position. And it wasn't any fault of my own. The company was just changing directions and didn't need me anymore. I took it personally, naturally. And of course, I was a mess. When I came out of that meeting and they told me, here's your check and thanks very much, I was hurt. I was scared, I was mad, I had my whole world just turned upside down. I mean, 22 and a half years at the same place is a long time. And I'm old, what am I gonna do now? Who's gonna wanna hire me? All that self-doubt, all that hopelessness, I mean, came rushing back in. And I immediately went into fix-it mode. Oh my God, I gotta do something. I have to call this person, I have to call that person. I felt like I have to have another job right now. This is terrible. And thankfully, I called my sponsor. Thankfully, I had this moment of clarity where I thought, okay, pick up the phone and call your sponsor. And I did. And she said, honey, she said, you are in grief and in shock, and you need to do absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. She said, if you don't have a job by next Monday or the following Monday, it's going to be okay. What you need to do is just stop and process those feelings. Feel, you know, go to a meeting, pick up your big book, call a sponsee. Just do absolutely nothing in terms of looking for another job. And it was the best advice. I sat there in my house for a week at least, riding these waves of emotions. And I hate them, you know? I don't know about you, but you know what? Feeling scared and sad and mad and all of these things, and self-doubt and pity and all of those feelings, they were intense. I've really gotten good at, you know, kind of just, oh yeah, I feel that, but I'm okay. I'll just go to a meeting, or, you know, nothing's ever that bad, but this was intense. And I got to feel all those feelings, and I didn't die. I didn't have to drink over it. I got to cry. I got to ugly cry. I got to babble at meetings, and people just let me talk nonsense at meetings for a little while. And then finally I said, okay, now I can get to work. I can start to do the next right indicated thing, which was to update my resume and start and download Indeed and ZipRecruiter and those things, and start telling people in the business community, you know, hey, if you know someone, da 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 da. And I will say that the next 2 months of looking for a job was not only exhausting, it was probably the most mentally and emotionally exhausting 2 months that I've had since my sobriety. There were a couple of days when I had to take a nap in the middle of the day, and I don't ever take a nap in the middle of the day. But I recognize now, having been in this program, that there is such a thing as self-care. You know, that it's okay for me to take care of me. And so when I realized that I was just useless, I laid down and just let my body rest, and then got back up and kept going, and just kept taking the next right indicated thing. And so eventually, I got hired at another organization, another nonprofit, and now I'm the executive director. Can you even believe that? I'm shocked. I am really shocked, but that's pretty cool. And it would not have happened. It would not have happened without all of you, without what I've come to learn in these rooms, without a sponsor, without good friends that are willing to just hold space for me while I'm a mess. You know, that's what we get here. Besides the tools and the spiritual program of recovery, we get amazing and lifelong friends that are willing to be there for you no matter what. I mean, I'm some of you I don't know, but some of you I can look around and I've known for many years, and I know if I needed you, you'd come. I know that. And you can know that if you needed me, I'd come. And so I'm just, you know, I'm not trying to brag or anything. Well, I am trying to brag about this program. I am trying, because I didn't do this. And it always cracks me up when a sponsee tells me how smart I am. I'm like, honey, I didn't make this shit up. It's only anything I ever learned in the rooms. You know, I'm just repeating what was told to me. And that's how we do it. That's that 12th step. All I have to do is repeat what you've told me that's worked for me, and hopefully it can work for you too. But Janet's right. You have to work the program. There's no easy way around it. I mean, it's an easy, it's a simple program, and it's not always easy. For any of you that are struggling with that horrible fourth step and fifth step, let me tell you, it's not bad. It's really not bad. It's probably, you haven't done anything worse than somebody else in this room. So just do it, and don't be afraid of it, because it'll save your life. That's, I think, I was desperate when I finally surrendered to do that fourth step, and my I had a new sponsor, because I'd been, like I said, I'd been bouncing in and out, and when I did go to rehab and they had us do the first three steps, and I told her, I said, I'll do them over again if you want, but I really need to do that first step, that fourth step, and she said, okay, just let's start there. And and if you're in your first year of recovery still, here's what I did. I made sure, because I was still working full-time, I still had a husband, I had kids going different directions. I made sure that every day I did something for my recovery. I either read out of the big book, worked on that fourth step, went to a meeting. I mean, I structured my day so that I could fit everything in and still have time to spend, you know, at least 30 minutes, hopefully an hour, maybe an hour and a half on my recovery. And I just put blinders on and made that my number one priority. If you make your recovery your number one priority, you'll be okay. It's when other things get in the way, when all the minutia and the chaos and somebody else's problems get in the way, that's when I would get distracted and not be able to stay, you know, and then that was a good excuse to drink, you know. So I appreciate Janet saying that she's getting outside help. I too realized that part of my emotional sobriety had to come from another program as well. I don't know about you, but I'm not just an alcoholic. I have other alcoholics in my life. And so I also go to Al-Anon. I'm one of those double winners, because there's other alcoholics in my life that I need to know how to take care of me and let them have the dignity of their own life. I don't know about you, but you know, I think, oh, gee, I've been sober now for a while. I can go out and save this person. I have all the answers, right? I don't, and I can't save anybody. They have to get here on their own, just like I had to finally get here on my own. They have to get to that point of surrender just like I did. And nothing I do or say is going to make that happen any quicker or any slower. You know, we've heard it over and over again. You can't make someone drink and you can't make someone stop drinking. That's just the truth. So I do go to Al-Anon, and I have found that it's the second thing that saved my life. AA was the first thing that saved my life, but I got to a point where I needed to, I was an emotional wreck by the time I finally, my sponsor said, you need an Al-Anon meeting. And so I went, and I've been going ever since.
Are you laughing? Are you feeling like, do you feel like I'm talking to you?
Oh. Funny how that happens. Well, if something I've said is striking with any one person, that's good. Then it's been worth it, and I haven't just completely babbled. But no, that is, that's another great program. And to me, it's like AA helped me get out of myself and be able to help others. And at some point I had to quit helping others and start taking care of myself. So there's that balance. And for me, that's what works for me. So anyway, I don't know if I can't see the time. What else do you want me to talk about? Do you want me to tell you my drunk-a-log? Talk about Keith? Okay. I'll tell you about Louis. So you all know that his sponsor named him Louis because he was such a mess that his sponsor used to tell him, let it go, Louis. Let it go. Let go and let God. And this was one of the first people. I got sober in San Luis County, so I went to meetings in Napomo and on the Mesa for the first couple years of my recovery. And then when I left my husband, I ended up living here in Santa Maria, and I kept going up to Rio Grande and Napomo, but then I thought, you know what, I have to plug in down here. So here's a little tip and trick, and you guys probably already know this. When you go to a new meeting or you move to a new town, you can still stay sober and you can still get connected, but what you need to do is get into service right away. So I knew enough from the old timers in Arroyo Grande that when I started coming to this meeting, I started washing coffee cups, because that way everybody after the meeting would bring me a cup and I could say hello and I could learn their name, and pretty soon I felt a part of. And I didn't make it up. Somebody told me to do that. And one of the first people I met was Louis over there. And when I needed to move from that place in Santa Maria to another place, I said, well, I'm going to try to move on Friday. I think the Alano Club was still open. And next thing I know, there is this mass of people from AA after they went to the 8 a.m. meeting. And then next thing I know, there's trucks and guys and people just amassed on my house, loaded all my stuff up, moved it across town. And, you know, that's kind of how AA works. And I was like, wow, that's pretty special. And so then, since then, we've been really good friends, and we go to a lot of meditation meetings. Right? I saw you almost start to meditate during this. That's what we start calling the speaker meetings, when Louis sit next to me meditating. But no, we make lifelong friends here. And I just want to tell you, it doesn't matter how far down the scale you've gone. One thing I've learned here is that I am no better, no worse than anybody else in this room. I mean, if you think about, you know, your worst thing that you ever did, luckily I never killed anybody, but I lied and stole and cheated my own parents. I stole from them. I trashed their house when they were out of town. Things I'm not proud of. I drove drunk with my kids in the car all the time. There was one time when I was living in Napomo, Saturday morning I needed to go to Parsons Brothers in Santa Maria. And so I take my 14-year-old kid with me and get in the Tahoe, and I get down on Orchard Road right there by in front of the Speedway, and realize that I kind of overshot the mark on the screwdrivers that morning. So I pulled over to the side of the road and I told my son, you have to drive. And I got in the back seat. He's 14 years old. Luckily, he'd been racing go-karts and other things, so he had an idea how to drive. But I got in the back seat and laid down and made him go to Parsons Brothers and get what I wanted to get. And then had him drive over to Santa Maria Liquor so I could get another bottle, drive around the back of the store into the alley back there, and proceed to drink some more and then have him drive me home. These are not proud moments as a mother, right? When I was in San Diego, I got hooked up with this guy. I found out after the fact that he was an ex-con. So his thing that he and his buddy did was they would go to homes where a deal was going down, and they would go in with guns, tape them up, take the drugs and the money, and then leave. And somehow, I thought this was great, you know, this was really cool and exciting because I was, you know, drinking and using it all the time. So when I say I drove a getaway car, what would happen was I would drive, he would jump out of the car, he could break into a car really fast, steal the stuff out of the car, jump back into the side door of the van, and I would drive away. And then he'd send me into the pawn shop or the jewelry store with stolen credit cards to buy jewelry at the jewelry store, and then he would take the jewelry and go pawn it for money. Not things I'm proud of, but things that I thought were perfectly okay to do because, you know, that's where drugs and alcohol took me. This same guy, things got kind of hot for him, and so I spent my tax return on one-way tickets to Puerto Rico for he and I. When I got to Puerto Rico, he ditched me. And so I found a pilot and a co-pilot on a dirt runway in Puerto Rico and had them take me over to St. Thomas Island because I thought I knew I had some friends here that living there, and I just showed up at their door and they're like, what the hell are you doing here? And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna live here now. And and so I said, I need to sleep on your couch for a couple weeks while I find a job. And I went out, I found a job bartending, and then I didn't have any money. So I called my folks and I said, hey, I have a job and I'll get a paycheck in a week or two. Could you just send me a little money to get by in the meantime? And they said, no, but we'll buy you a plane ticket to come home. And I said, well, no, I'm gonna stay here. No, we'll buy you a plane ticket to come home. So I went to the airport and tried to cash in the ticket, but apparently they had already thought of that. So I got back on the plane, came back with 64 cents in my pocket, and that's how I ended up back in Santa Maria after, you know, thinking. And you know what, here's the crazy thing, folks. I didn't think anything about this. I didn't think there was anything wrong with this. I didn't think there was anything scary. You know, a 20-something year old woman just kind of traipsing around the planet. You know, I was gonna figure it out. That's, right? Yeah, I'll figure it out. This is no problem as long as, you know, as long as I can get a job and some more booze. And plus, you know, St. Thomas, those cruise ships come in, the alcohol's cheap for the tourists, so I had it all figured out. But that's, you know, that's the kind of thing that I did. And then, and I'm really grateful that something or somebody was watching over me, because there were many, many times when I probably should have been dead. And I'm really, really grateful. I'm really, really grateful to have been able to make it here, get into these rooms, get to know all of you, get to live this life of recovery, because it hasn't always been easy and it hasn't always been pretty. Life is messy, you know? Life is just messy sometimes. But we get through it, and we can get through it without alcohol. So I think that's it. I'm not going to continue about. I will take this, though. Okay.